There will be maintenance, and by maintenance I mean correction of residual errors and also implementation of changes, because you're going to have changes no matter what. For that reason, I think that if you're going to emphasize only languages, you're being a little bit short-sighted. The entire system has to be considered. Languages are not going to be the answer to the whole thing by any means. Now, out of all those things you have to do, debug and maintenance are the two costly ones that you're likely to overlook. When people underestimate programming costs, and believe me, everybody underestimates programming costs, when they underestimate them, it's in the debugging. They say, yeah, I'm going to take this long to plan it, and I'm going to take this long to code it, and I'm going to take this long to debug it, and I'm going to take this long to document it. That's a mistake right there, you know, it should do a little more. And maintenance, well, we won't think about that, that comes later. And sure enough, it takes them this long to plan it, and this long to code it, and this long to debug it. So it's important that you think in terms of the debugging also, as you're looking into your language and your system to do your programming. And the maintenance also, there will be changes. They are inevitable. There will be changes. And if you have not designed the system and programmed it so that changes can be made, your costs will continue to be high through the life of that system. Well, what are the various approaches to programming? There are not enough good programmers to go around. So different people in trying to program their process control try different approaches because they have different kinds of programmers. First of all, I'll call the first kind of programmer I'll call a super programmer. I'll spell it with a capital S if he documents and with a little s if he doesn't. The super programmer, the guy who has been programming now for 10 years and is really good, really good. If he has that capital S, he's really valuable as well as being a very good programmer because he does document his work, but he really knows what he's doing. And if you have a staff of super programmers, you're probably going to want a super programming language which will be the most economical one for them to use. So what's the second kind? Well, I like to call these the marketplace programmers. They're the kind that our customers come to us and they say, we want Fortran. Why? Because I can find programmers who know Fortran and I'm afraid they'll never cut assembly language. I'm not really confident about that premise, but there's a lot of people who really feel that way, and so I go along. But you have to call them marketplace programmers. Most programmers are not super programmers, even some of them have been around a long time. And in that case, you will want to have a system which allows you to make use of these marketplace programmers. Inevitably, you're going to have a super programmer around, because when the debugging gets bad, and when the instrumentation doesn't work, or something really messes up, you have to really dig into the program. You got to have super programmers around. There's no doubt about it. There's getting to be a third approach now, which I'll call using non-programmers. Now, these people are engineers who really know their process, and they want to do the design of their process, and they don't want to do programming. I have to digress for just a moment. Jim Shuffer gave you a little speech on this same topic, but I want to put it into your minds again, is that there really are two different ways to approach this stuff. One is with what most of us think of as programming, which I'll call algorithmic programming. It means the step-by-step outline of what you're going to do. And both assembly language and Fortran belong to algorithmic languages. You set up step-by-step exactly what you're going to do. The other approach is what's been called fill-in-the-blanks, non-algorithmic, non-sequential. There's all kinds of different words for this. But it's the kind of thing where the programming has actually been done, and what in effect the programmer, if you want to still call him that, does is give a whole bunch of parameters which allows the system to organize itself into an effective program. Now, we are, of course, beginning to get to the age of the non-programmer. Prospero was mentioned, fill in the blanks. Our bicep system, same kind of thing. You fill in the blanks, and sure enough, you have a scan log alarm system, and control points are controlled to the parameters that the engineer gives. Don't think for a second that you can ever do away with the engineer. Somebody's got to know what's going on in that process. Anyway, you have super programmers and their approach to the thing, you got the marketplace programmers and their approach to the thing, and you got the non-programmers and their approach to things. And as I view the future, there are going to be pressures in to diverge into those three streams of software, support software by manufacturers or by companies for themselves to help with those kind of programmers. Well, what kind of languages do these different kinds of programmers want? The super programmer is happy with two different kinds of languages. One is the all-purpose language, the kind where you can write anything. You can write your executive, you can write your I.O., you can write the applications packages, whether it's a data acquisition, control, supervisory, jargon, whatever the words are. The all-purpose language can be used for any of those things. Then there are all other languages except the general-purpose language are system-dependent. You have to have an operating system given to you. It has an interface to it which organizes the computer for you. The super programmer, of course, he wants a super programming language. There isn't a bell and whistle that anyone hasn't thought of that he doesn't want because he realizes he can do something a little more elegantly. Now, this isn't per se wrong. I think it's wrong for marketplace programmers to try to use all the things that super programmers can. It's probably going to be uneconomical. But there's nothing wrong with super programmers using a super programming language. Now, there is the marketplace programming language, I suppose we might call it, for marketplace programmers. You want to be able to talk to the process. You want your interfaces simple. You want them to be able to do everything, but you don't want them to be able to do so many things that your rate of return goes like this on the amount of time they expend. And so that somewhere in there's an optimum for the marketplace programmer. And of course, there are the non-programming languages. I talked about them just a little moment ago, where the guy doesn't really program. He doesn't write algorithmically. He just fills in parameters. And there's going to be a lot of pressure for the non-programming system. I've obviously painted a picture, which disagrees with some of the other panel members, that we are going to be able to move to one standard. I'm just, again, taking a snapshot of the future. I just don't think it's going to happen. There are going to be different kinds of applications, different kinds of people are just going to want different things. I think the more we narrow it down, the less money will be spent in the United States for programming. And Lord knows, programming costs are going up and up, and something has to be done. Okay, so in summary, one last word. We're going to go in several different directions. The money is there to be saved if we can make the languages fit the applications.
Thank you, Dave. It occurred to me when he said, when he made the remark, if you have a staff of super programmers, that he was going to end it up by saying they'll go into business for themselves. The final panel members' comments will be made by Arthur C. Lum, who's the head of the Computer Applications Group of the Engineering Division of the Procter & Gamble Company. Art.
Thanks, Eric. I'd like to just very briefly focus on the practical implications of program language standards for computer control as it affects a business like Procter & Gamble, who is a customer of computer manufacturers and tries to make profitable applications of online control systems. I put the emphasis on profitable. I think our objectives are really threefold here in our operation. One is to have the ability to facilitate the programming of online control systems. And by this, I mean the ability to estimate how much the programming job is going to cost, what kind of people are going to be required to carry out the job, what kind of a resource drain we'll have in our company to put a team together to implement a particular application. How much maintenance our manufacturing plants are going to have to provide for such a system after it's designed and installed. The second objective I see is a savings of dollar costs, not only capital dollar costs, but expense dollar costs. Control systems are expensive. We are trying to look at ways we can reduce the costs of installing computer control systems to make applications easier to justify in our company, and also to reduce the amount of ongoing maintenance that is required to keep a computer control system in operation. Then I think a third objective, which is follows, I think, from the first two, is that if we can make some improvements in our ability to program computer systems and our ability to reduce costs, we are going to be able to provide computer control for processes in our company that will make them more profitable. As you probably all know, the cost of computer hardware has come down considerably since 1960. The cost of people is going up. Qualified people are more difficult to find. And also, at least in our business, it's difficult to keep qualified people, programming personnel particularly, interested and challenged in our manufacturing environment. I actually see three kinds of programs or software making up a computer control system. One is the monitor level type of program, the real-time executive, if you will, I/O control types of programs, programs that interface with typers, panels, other hardware in the process. The second type we call the non-control program or support programming, involving data acquisition type programs, logging programs, data handling programs. I want to emphasize the fact that in control systems I'm familiar with, the gross ability of the system to handle tables and files of data within the system, keep them available for programs that need to have access to them, keep the data filed properly, keep it protected properly so that it's accessible at the proper time, is one of the most important functions of a computer control system, and I'm afraid one of the functions that has been given the smallest amount of attention to. I think we tend to think of this type of a function as a data processing kind of function, file handling, file manipulation, information storage and retrieval. But we have to have information and data on file and on hand for control programs to use, for example. And this data has to be gotten either from the process directly or input by people through control panels, for example. And so the file manipulation, file handling, if you will, data processing aspect is important in a control system. The third type of software I call control programs, or application programs, if you will. These are the programs that actually create or determine the physical effects on the process. Models of the process, optimization schemes, regulatory schemes, the DDC schemes. These are all the application areas. The problem-oriented language is the one that is most required at the present time and perhaps the most important one. This would be a language that would handle process I/O, multiple peripheral devices on a system. Another function that needs to be handled and is not done very well at the present time is when a peripheral device fails, what do you do? A typewriter fails to respond, a printer fails to respond. What does the system do to recover and get back in operation? We don't want to get an admin dump out when a typewriter fails. We want to do something a little more graceful. We need to also have adequate communication with the executive system. This is a very important function and is being handled in different ways and different pieces of software at the present time, but this communication between the executive and queuing up programs, scheduling programs, for example, is extremely important. I mentioned file handling earlier. Many systems that we have installed and ones that we see potential have requirements for batch background operation. I'm not sure whether this is a typical requirement, but in many of our manufacturing facilities, we see requirements to develop programs and handle scientific and other and data processing type calculations, if possible, on the same piece of hardware. I think some of you gentlemen will disagree with me on the requirement for this kind of an operation, but I see that for certain systems, having access to a batch background partition to handle this type of job is very important. Certainly, the ability to compile programs on the system in the plant is a strong one. Memory protection is one other area that is not being handled very well in systems I know about, software that I know about, or hardware-software combinations. Unfortunately, core programs can get bombed out, if you will. I'll use jargon here. by programs that are under test or when unsuspected bugs come up in existing programs. And I think the area of memory protection is one that hasn't been tackled to any great extent so far. The ability to test programs while the system is online with the process is one other that I feel is important. We have to be able to keep up with the changing demands of the process control job, and there simply is no substitute for being able to test a program while the system is online controlling the process. If there was as simple a software system available that could handle scanning, alarming, and editing of analog and digital inputs, logging functions, operator communications from inside the computer to operators outside, and table generation and maintenance, I think we would have come a long way toward getting the costs down in one very costly area of programming. I think in the area of procedure-oriented languages, Fortran or some dialects of Fortran have been very adequate for our applications. I want to emphasize the four areas that I think need to be given the most attention in standardized language efforts. One is debugging, the second is documentation, the third is the facility for change and update. I think as Dave Frost pointed out earlier, there's no control system that I know of that is static. It's always changing. Either the process is changing, people are bringing in new instrumentation, or control engineers are coming up with better ways to do the job, and I think a system has to be adaptable to this. And the fourth is the interface with the operator. Documentation, by the way, as I define it, is the vehicle by which a programmer communicates with some other programmer. The documentation is the link between the programmer that makes the changes and the programmer that originally developed the system. You must have documentation on the job site that can be understood by the man that's going to maintain the system, whatever that involves. The other thing to comment on, I think, is this operator interface, and I think some of you people that are interested in hardware, more interested in hardware, I would say that we need, in the computer control application business, a better operator interface. Now, I'm not proposing a standard operator panel, but I think we could do a lot better job being done now. It seems to me that some vendors I know about have five or six, in quotes, standard operator panels, and then special panels that meet any requirement you want, which is fine, except it seems to me that we should trade off some of the individuality here, or maybe some flexibility, for the ability to interface with some standard kind of a panel that will simplify the programming job, make the system easier to maintain, get the job done cheaper, and provide all the functions, of course, that are really absolutely required. I'll give you two examples of what I think a more standardized approach to programming for computer control systems can do in two jobs for B&G experience. Number one, a job that took 8 man years of programming effort, I feel that a more standardized approach in the problem-oriented area could have saved 1/4 of this time, or 2 man years of effort. So I think we could come up with a 25% saving, and I think 1/4 of a man year per year in maintenance of the system could be saved. And a second application, which involved 2 man years worth of programming effort, I predict that we could have saved 1/3 of this effort with a more standardized approach. The only way that we're going to make progress, however, is to get a unified approach by the people that use systems. What is really the problem? I think the dollars are going to dictate the pace of this effort. And I'll point out one more example of 100 loops of control on a typical process. 75 of these loops probably can very nicely operate with standard PID control. 15 have a requirement for supervisory or set point control, and 10 really need direct digital control. So it seems to me that we ought to be directing our efforts not toward EDC or supervisory, but bearing in mind that all of our continuous processes don't have 100% requirements for DDC or supervisory, but have a pretty good split between the two different types, and the majority of the loops in the process can operate very nicely with standard analog hardware.
Thank you, Art. This is the end of any formal presentation by the panel, and I guess the conventional thing is to ask for questions, which I guess I'll do in a conventional way.
The question is addressed to David Frost and Dr. Scheffler, and involves this question of a super language for the super programmer. I think that to propose such a language for the scale of computers that we're presently using in the process industries, and for those computers that I think we will be using, I don't really think it's practical. Not only that, but to propose that we give each programmer, each user, the ability to program his own executive system, his own control system, I don't think that's a practical thing to do either. It would be like giving the user a bunch of packs and asking him to build his own computer. Comments?
Well, anybody that wants to comment may.
I'd like to comment on that. First of all, you made two comments. One, on the scale of computer we're using today, whether it would be feasible to have what was called a super language. I think that's wrong, and I think, in fact, it's just the opposite. That with the scale of computer that you see today, that you can't afford not to do it this way. You look at what's happening today, and every single day another computer is being marketed. And these are good machines, and they are powerful machines. And most of the small machines that are being marketed today for under $30,000 are capable of doing the bulk of the process control jobs that have been installed to date if you eliminated some of the features such as online compiling and overly large and complex executive systems. Now, people who want to take advantage of them, people are taking advantage of them. They're tossing out some big machines in favor of small ones. The question is, can a vendor really afford to produce assembly-level programming for this wide variety of small machine and different configurations? And even worse so, can a user afford to do this, even in a specialized application? And I think the answer is the economics just aren't with it. That if you can't cut the software cost, then these small machines are not going to pay off. The second comment you made was about giving the user the this dangerous tool of writing his own executives and all that. In general, a user will not want to write his own executive. And in fact, what most users would like is an executive that works and would not like to touch it at all. However, when a bug arises, he would really appreciate it if the manufacturer had someone who understood the executive who could correct it in a reasonable length of time. If the manufacturer produced his system software in a better language, it would be easier to find these bugs and quicker and easier to maintain at less cost than to the vendors, I think. The users need not get into the software unless the occasion arises. On the other hand, there are lots of people who are not like IBM and GE and Control Data, who are properly termed vendors, who are in the system business, who are buying computers and installing them as part of systems. In fact, the predictions for process control are that the machinery manufacturers, the people who are building the process themselves, are going to take a dominant role in the installation of systems. These people need a tool for programming computers and systems, and I don't think assembly-level language is the tool. This does not mean, for example, that in a small machine you have to be able to compile this so-called real-time language or super language in the machine. That isn't necessary for that application at all. I think it's economical to do that, and I think it's desirable to do it that way.
Did someone on the panel have another comment? Did you, Bob, or not?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on the point that we don't have the requirement, on a real small machine, to have online compilation capabilities. And if you can talk the user into giving up this concept and compiling on his big data processing machine and loading the binary output of the compiler into his mini computer, then you've got the chance to use a higher level language on one of these small machines and still get the payoff of the lower cost programming.
Are you talking about some concept like the app system?
Yes.
Well, we have right now, I guess, quite a few marketplace programmers as various costs. And we also have programmers who are writing programs for non-programmers, still in type design people. Now, we looked into three process control machines, and all these manufacturers say that they will sell the thing a two-week course. You send your programmer to the factory, and they'll teach him something about their software package, whether it's Fortran or some sort of assembly or compiler or what. And I'm really looking for a comment as to how well prepared is a marketplace programmer who has no specific experience with this machine go in 2 weeks at least get a start to being able to program.
Now, the 2 weeks is obviously so that he'll find out where the motel is so he can come back later. But I guess my own opinion is 2 weeks is ridiculous for anything, but I imagine it's yours from your tone of voice. But are there comments from the panel?
The education process in programming is a never-ending thing. It isn't like, you know, you graduate from high school one day, that kind of thing. I don't know where the economically feasible dividing point is between formal education and the school of hard knocks, whether 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever different vendors may offer is the optimum amount would be difficult to say. But certainly in any kind of programming education, you always have to consider yourself that you're getting an introduction. And I think if you hope to get more, you're going to have difficulty no matter. It isn't just process control, that's just programming.
Well, the question is 2 weeks enough of an introduction to the school of hard knocks?
Did you ask these proposed vendors what their objectives were for this training in terms of performance of your people after they complete the course? Maybe that might be a good question.
It's almost a nebulous question in my mind. My thought is, for example, let's take if this vendor were IBM. Was he saying in 2 weeks he'd teach you how to do Prospero, or was he saying in 2 weeks he would teach you how to know the assembly language interactions of TSX? There's a great deal of difference between the two and what can be accomplished in 2 weeks. But I think that no matter what happens, and this was one of the comments I made earlier, somebody has to be schooled for from the user's point of view, because God knows unless you lease the thing and can get the guy, you know, there with a shotgun, the vendor's not going to supply this forever. You have to have somebody who is capable of maintaining your system from your standpoint. And this man is not, you won't even scratch the surface in 2 weeks. You won't even touch it. The most he can learn in 2 weeks, maybe he'll learn a part of the set of the instructions and how to use them, but he certainly would not be in a skilled or even a beginning skilled assembly language programmer after 2 weeks.
I'm saying we're certainly going to invest in 6 months, you know, 6 months on hand to educate him where perhaps two or three different machines, he could then go to one of these 2 or 3 week courses to get an introduction to their software. Is there anything available like this?
I guess my feeling about it is that there isn't any reason to learn more than one machine. In other words, what you're going to do really is take a marketplace programmer and turn him into a semi-super programmer. And the way to do it is by letting him learn one of these stupid systems well enough. They're all alike once you get behind them. You know, it's a lot of flap trap that goes along with them. But the other thing is he's got to have an objective which is other than learning. In other words, our experience is that 6 months with a chemical engineer is a reasonable length of time, but you use a trick. In other words, you give him an objective to learn, and the objective is you say you're going to maintain this system, and you have to learn to do it, and you have to shoot the bugs.
I'd like to ask Art Lamb, alum, why he feels that in some systems you want to break it down to some loops on supervisory and some on analog and some on DDC. Why not the whole sphere on DDC?
I think if you look at an existing process that already has analog control installed, it's just plain good economics to keep the analog control that is going to be required but doesn't embellished with the supervisory control or require any more than the standard PID control. Now, on a new process, it seems to me that if your intent is only to do standard control, it still isn't going to be economically feasible to put direct digital control on the whole process. However, if you want to do advanced control, I guess is a currently popular term, if you want to do more than standard PID algorithms can provide. Yes, you might want to go to direct digital control over a higher percentage of the loops in the process, but my point is that you may not need to for a large majority of processes. I don't know if that answers your question.
The economics, it would seem reasonable just to go grand slam all
You might be able, however, to do it with a smaller machine than you would if you went on the whole process with DDC at a lot less cost.
This is a ticklish question that has plagued lots and lots of people. For example, have you thought of the idea of what happens when your computer fails? So, you know, there goes the old process down the ball game. So what you need is dual computers if you're going full DDC with no backup, which is the economical way to go for DDC. If you're going to have set point stations or even backup manual stations, you've lost a lot of your economic incentive to go besides the fact that normally now the few people that are trying non-backed up DDC are trying it with backed up computers, which took one hell of a lot of dollars. Pardon me back there. The real thing, the point that I take exception to is the fact that going this, quote, PID route for most of your loops, this is a point that I think most users and vendors have just begun to really feel into what should be the true boat. There are a lot of control ways of controlling a plant, and just because you can run your plant PID doesn't mean you can't get another 5% out of your plant, however, by going a different control strategy, an interactive control strategy, for example, or a non-structured model strategy that solves some objective function, which is economically what you deem to be proper. And in this case, maybe you really don't want PID control, but I think this is the next generation coming up.
Man in the way in the back, please.
I spent several weeks in the Foy Secretary Library, the Engineering Library, and asking IBM and Control Data, and I couldn't get any information other than what's written in the general magazines on these particular languages. So number one, I think the information in this area should be disseminated. The proprietary rights of the various big corporations should be downgraded a little bit so that everybody will know what's going on.
I guess I'll start out by referring you to where you can find out about 8 of these languages. And this is in the December 1968 issue of the Transactions of the IEEE Group on Industrial Electronics and Control Instrumentation. The number is IECI-15, number 2, and it's available from IEEE headquarters. The second thing is that it's my general belief that the vendors generally respond with more literature than you can stand on request.
Just find a salesman.
But it is true, I guess, if the salesman didn't think you were a customer, he might be reluctant to give it to you. The most recent books on computerized process control, of which I particularly refer to the one by Cornish, Horton, and Associates, does cover this subject to some extent. The details of the language, however, are generally buried in the publications of the vendors, and this is because they expect to sell them.
Just sitting here listening to the suggestions from the panel from both a user and a vendor standpoint, it seems like all the benefits that can be derived are coming from the user. He can utilize his programmers on multi-systems being of maybe different vendor machines, etc. What incentive, I would like to know, is there in the vendor for him to dump and install more research and development dollars into developing this so-called super language?
I guess, as usual, I resort to the Fortran history. In other words, there was a time when all non-IBM companies announced that Fortran was nice, but it wasn't the greatest language. But they happened to have the greatest language. Those languages are all dead, and some of the companies that supported them are dead too. And their death was in part due to just what you said, that users said, if it doesn't talk Fortran, it's not a computer, forget it. And this is a motivation which could be created. But the second one is that if you consider the history of process control computers by individual vendors, that they have changed their language from generation to generation, I was going to say day to day, from generation to generation, and so they too have had the same problem. In other words, a standard in which they could essentially say to the customer, we'd like to give you what you want, but it's not the standard. See, they could hide behind it. Then they too could train their own programmers. They could steal programmers from any user, where now, of course, they can only steal them from the users that use their equipment. But I think there are more benefits to the user, because the one non-benefit that was not mentioned here that a vendor would have with a non-standard language is that of locking a user into his particular system and keeping him from switching to another.
I think there is possibly some incentive for the vendor. The fact that you program systems in a higher level language does not necessarily imply that they can be then changed from machine to machine easily, so that if he produces a package that it could then distribute through the industry. That's probably not true, whether it's programmed in a high-level language or not. But a more pertinent comment was made by a vice president of Leeds and Northrop at some meeting I was at some time ago, where his comment was that what they had to sell was know-how. They understand the problems of their particular segment of the control industry, and what they build into their programming packages is their experience and their know-how, and that's what they have to sell. If he had a higher level language in which to do it, he could apply more of his know-how more easily and produce specialized packages for his customers, so that different customers of different vendors might be using different EDC programs, for example. But the only real question is whether those different DDC programs can be produced economically or not.
Do you feel that there might be more progress made if this language, or at least if a rough draft of this language, was produced from the user? And then you'll have something to debate with the vendors on a particular item instead of just looking at generalities. And I'll leave the mic now. Let someone else give it.
Herb Pike from GE. There are two questions. First, about the saving, you know, what are the vendors going to get when the users can do it cheaper? Well, I'll tell you what they're going to get. They're going to get a hell of a lot bigger market. And that sounds real good right now. Now, one of the problems in this whole standardization business in the past, that at least as I see it, and this is a personal opinion, it's been a users off in one corner throwing rocks at those guys who are the vendors for not doing things, and the users thinking the vendors aren't interested in the problems, and the vendors thinking the users aren't sophisticated, and everybody being just wrong as hell. And it came out, I think, at the meeting at Purdue that we all have a lot to learn from each other, and that we're going to go a long ways by working together. We probably won't go anywhere by working separately. And so I don't think it's ever going to happen if a bunch of users get off in a corner and kind of say, this is what we want. For one thing, I like to think, since computers and software are our major business, rather than something we just use as a tool in doing our business, that in most cases, although I know of exceptions, there is much more expertise in the software and language area in most of these vendor organizations. And if you don't look to this for the guidance in what you try and do, well, you're not going to have as much technical background as you should in these efforts.
Yeah, I think that Herb makes a very good point, that the markets here are certainly have a great deal of potential for expansion, And I think with a means of getting the programming job done at the right cost is going to benefit the customers by getting more applications installed in his own plants and from the manufacturer by getting more hardware and systems sold.
Thank you. I don't see any more anxious questions. I thank the panel for their interesting disagreements and the audience for its participation.